ていう。
And welcome to the Education Town Hall. This is Virginia Spatz, the Education Town Hall's feature reporter. We have remotely with us this morning Thomas Bird, who is the host of the program. Thomas, are you there?
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on the Education Town Hall. We have the honor and pleasure of being a part. We at Radio's local live wire content. Here on WPWC, 1480 AM. Check us out live online at weactradio.com. This is your humble servant and host, Thomas Bird, and indeed an honor and a privilege that the Creator has afforded me another opportunity to see a new day and present to you a new installment of the Education Town Hall. And I'm glad that you're along with us today. I want to start off, as I normally do, by thanking those who sponsor the show. This month, our major sponsor is the Washington Teachers Union. Thanks to the generosity and under the leadership of Ms. Elizabeth Lynn Davis. Thank you so much, Washington Teachers Union, for sponsoring the Education Town Hall. I believe we're going to have a great show today, folks, and we're going to start off by bringing in my right arm, my feature reporter, my assistant producer, Ms. Virginia Spatz. Virginia, good morning, and take it away.
Good morning, Thomas. I have a report here that I would actually like to put off sharing because right now we have a full studio. We have the executive director of Many Languages One Voice with us this morning, as well as a staff member and some youth organizers. And we also have in studio Christian Carter, who's running for mayor of the District of Columbia. And I do have some important news that I'd like to share, but I'm going to hold off until the bottom of the hour so that we can bring in our special guest this morning.
Okay.
And first, I'd like to have Sapna introduce herself and explain a little about this organization that I think is unknown to a lot of people.
Sure. Good morning, and thank you guys so much for having us on We Act Radio. We're very excited to be here. My name is Sapna Pandya, and as you mentioned, I am the executive director of Many Languages One Voice. We are a local nonprofit based in Mount Pleasant, D.C. We work with the immigrant community that lives here in D.C. that doesn't speak English as a first language. What we're really trying to do is to build a power of immigrant youth to be able to provide their own solutions to what we consider great education injustices happening in our district. So we organize building campaigns and building up the leadership of young people, young English language learner, high school students in particular, to be able to address those injustices and to provide solutions. We also administer the DC Language Access Coalition. That's actually something that's been around for quite a while, came together really around 2001, 2002, and the coalition advocated for the passage of a law that I think also a lot of people in DC don't know about, which is the DC Language Access Act. And so the coalition fought for the passage of that law. It was passed unanimously by DC City Council in 2004, so we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of that passage. And what that law really does is it says that government agencies are required to provide translation and interpretation services to folks who don't speak English as a first language. What we see is that that's not happening, which is why we organize to hold the government accountable and make sure that that is happening.
Okay. Thank you. And I wanted to mention that I have attended a few events sponsored by your organization. And one thing that struck me was that in the district public schools, administrators would speak about Spanish interpretation as though that were the key for multilingual people. And in the room at the time were Amharic speakers, Mandarin speakers, and a number of other immigrant communities. And so I wanted to kind of get some thoughts about that. Should we turn it over to our students or to your coordinator?
Sure. I think Maria Alejandra, who is now lead on what is the Student Multi-Ethnic Action Research Team, could address a little bit the diversity of the student population that is currently represented in D.C.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having us. As you said, Spanish is not the only language that is spoken in DCPS, and we have over 4,200 ELL students in DCPS. That makes up 10% of the student population. They come from 133 different countries and speak 107 different languages. DCPS has recognized six languages as the main ones spoken, and those are Spanish, Amharic, Vietnamese, Chinese, and French. So we do have a variety of students, and unfortunately, when we talk about ELL students, English language learners, we tend to just go towards the Spanish population, Spanish-speaking population, and really don't think about, you know, French speakers or Amharic speakers, which there's a big population communities here.
And just so that we listeners are aware of who all is in our studio, could we have our youth organizer introduce yourself and speak a little bit about why you're joining us?
Yeah, my name is Frank. I'm a student organizer at Main Language One Voice. I'm here to support what we stand for, what we're fighting for, which is the equality of education for ELL students.
And where are you from? Are you native to D.C.?
No, I'm from Cameroon.
And so is your first language French?
Yeah, French.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we did have another organizer on the phone, but I believe she'll have to join us again later. I don't think she's there right now. Thomas, I want to make sure, did you have questions?
Well, I want to first thank our guests for being here with us today, and I have to apologize for not being able to be there personally myself in the studio, but I had some other business. But I wanted to go back to Safna, the executive director, asked, when did your organization, when did you found your organization?
So we really started organizing young people in earnest in 2008, but we didn't incorporate Many Languages, One Voice until 2010. So we also just celebrated our anniversary December 1st in, you know, this was our three-year anniversary of having our organization around. But as I mentioned, Many Languages, One Voice actually grew out of the advocacy of the DC Language Access Coalition that precedes us. So the coalition is still around, and what has happened is now MLove, as we call ourselves, mm-hmm. we administer the coalition, but we're building out from the advocacy, and rather than just have folks speak on behalf of immigrant communities as service providers and whatnot, we started, like I said, in 2008 to actually build up the leadership of immigrants themselves to address the root causes mm-hmm. of the problems going on, to come up with solutions, and to be able to put together campaigns themselves and show up at city council, show up in front of Kai Henderson, etc., and voice what it is that they feel from their own experience needs to happen and change in DC public schools.
Yes, I am very familiar with the Language Access Coalition. I worked for a number of years with the Multicultural Community Service, which is a member of that coalition.
Yes, absolutely. They were one of the founders as well of the coalition. So a bunch of different service providers came together in 2001, 2002, as I mentioned earlier, and fought for the passage of that law, which it's great that we have the law, but laws are only good if they are enforced. And so that's the problem.
And is it Maria Alejandra?
Yes.
I was hoping that you could explain a little bit to our listeners how the students themselves, because we really, although we're, you know, interested in DC issues wider, we focus on education, how high school students in particular are learning to advocate for themselves. And Frank, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, so part of MLove is also the Student Multi-Ethnic Action Research Team, SMART, as we call ourselves. and we come together twice a week, but mainly we're there every day. Our youth come to our office every day. We talk about issues that are happening, articles that are coming up, you know, different, like the mayoral candidates, what their stance on education are. You know, we talk about these issues in order for us to really be aware and do the research. And so that, you know, we know what we're talking about. The youth here, they come, Fridays are our meetings in the afternoons from 4:30 to 7. And we basically run the meetings. They're youth-led. They come up with the issues that are most important to them and share it with the rest of the youth. We have about 10 to 12 leaders, lead organizers, that we meet on Wednesdays. And they really are the ones that lead the meetings with the rest of the SMART members, and they're the ones that bring up the issues. They're the ones that are doing the research, doing organizing the actions, and organizing around their schools and with the students to really bring out these issues that are happening to them. And I can turn it over to Frank, and he can talk a little bit about what's going on in the schools and some of the issues that are happening.
Before you do that, I just want to ask a quick question.
Sure.
Can you give us a sense of what schools that are involved in this?
Sure, of course. We have a variety of different schools, both public and charter schools. We have Frank here is from Coolidge High School. We also have, we're at Roosevelt, and we are at Wilson. We're also at Capital City. We are trying to get into as many other schools as possible. I've been trying to talk to different organizations who also work with young youth, ELL youth who are going through the same issues. Those are some of the schools that we're at.
Okay. Have you approached any of the schools east of the river?
We're trying to. So if you know anybody, please let us know. We want to be there. I personally am at the schools and trying to build those connections and bridges with the students. I am trying to go out to as many schools as possible and hopefully find someone that can introduce us to the school community, and then we'll take it away from there.
One of our students leaders currently is from Eastern High School, but, mm-hmm. The populations, the reason we've picked those schools is they have the higher number of immigrant or English language learner students, but you're absolutely right. Actually, those schools that have a smaller population, we need to really reach out to as well, because they're even more isolated there.
Right. I would imagine that there's a less of a population east of the river, but I may be wrong. Is that correct?
There is less proportionately, but that doesn't mean that they don't exist. So absolutely, mm-hmm. there are English language learner students all across the entire district.
Mm-hmm. And before we take our break, I wanted to make sure that we do ask Frank to speak from the student perspective and note that we do have a mayoral candidate in the studio who's going to speak with us, I hope, after the break. And so are there any questions that you would want to ask this candidate? And, of course, we'll ask other candidates as they come on during the campaign. Or is there something else that you feel is more important that the schools really need to address in terms of language?
Yeah, I think schools need to provide, bilingual counselor. And then also the counselor needs to be trained how to use the language access, because it blocks the communication between the parent and the school. So, yeah, that's one of them.
So has your group, as it meets, actually talked about the fact that we have a mayoral campaign coming up? And, do you have concerns? We deal here on this show with administrators in the charter schools, in the public schools, but also with candidates and council members and the mayor. So would there be questions you'd want to ask them in particular? Do you feel like it's not funded well enough, or there just isn't enough knowledge? What do you think?
I think the question I have is, is there someone that makes sure that the law is being followed? Because I don't see it. Based when I'm talking to my friend, they all have the same problem. So it's not like it's only my school the problem is everywhere.
So we have a law, but it's not being enforced. And that's something you think that all of our mayoral candidates and, maybe our council members should be considering all the time.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. Okay.
Hey, let me ask Frank. I know we've already taken a break, but I'm going to ask Frank. You go to Coolidge, is that correct?
I go to Coolidge.
And so do you get a sense that it's just at Coolidge, or is it, you get a sense that it's DTKSY, that the needs of the EL or students are not being met appropriately in according to the law?
Sorry, can you say it again?
Do you get a sense that it's just at Coolidge, or is it across DCPS as a whole?
Is across DCPS.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. I believe we are about ready, we're approaching our first break of the day. So why don't we do that right now? And folks, I'm certainly glad you all are in studio with us. And I'm glad that we got these folks listening to the show. And I guarantee if you stay with us, we will be right back.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
We Act Radio, powered by Ethical Electric. Do something.
Yeah, my name is Bill Lucy. I'm President Emeritus of the Coalition of Black Trade Unions. We're working both here and nationwide, and we appreciate the support of We Act on trying to keep alive the memory and legacy of Nelson Mandela. We tend to forget about things too quickly. We have probably one of the greatest freedom fighters of all time who has left a legacy across the world of struggle on behalf of oppressed people. So here in Washington, D.C. and across the country, we've got to struggle to make sure that our young people remember the contributions that Mandela made and fight to keep his legacy alive. My name is William Lucy. I'm President Emeritus of the Coalition of Black Trade Unions. And We Act, do something.
My name is Jamira Bullock, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Wallace Bright, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Victoria Harper, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is James Hill, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
We've been talking with our peers across the District of Columbia, and we discovered that a lot of them are talking about how they believe that we are not being provided the high-quality education that we know we need and quite frankly deserve.
They are talking about students in other jurisdictions who are, for the most part, learning and being supported in modern facilities and have access to 21st century technology.
We're hearing them say that there are actually three public school systems in the district, DCPS West, DCPS East of the River, and public charter schools.
They are saying things like, we have been subjected to too many experimental models, unproven educational fads, and countless changes in philosophy and direction.
Some students are talking about how they feel that some of those in charge of our education system talk the good talk about reform and use all the others, but at the end of the day, don't really give a damn about academic achievement for all.
Worst of all, everyone is talking about how we don't even have any voice in the public discourse around the direction of our education system.
Until now, because we all listen and share our views on the education town hall, we are thankful that the host Thomas Bird believes that we should have access as well as a megaphone to talk back to the powers that be in the district and in halls of Congress. Join Thomas Bird every Thursday at 11 a.m. for the education town hall, 1480 a.m. Listen live online at weactradio.com.
You're listening to We Act Radio, WPWC 1480 AM, broadcasting live from Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in D.C.
Hall. This is your host, Thomas Bird. It's an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege to have joining us today folks from Three Languages, One Voice. We also have in studio with us today a mayoral candidate, Christian Carter, who's going to talk about his education platform and his views on education. He was a part of a citywide mayoral candidates forum this past Monday, and he's indicated that he has a lot to bring to the table with regard to education.
Okay, Thomas, Christian Carter is here, and we're going to let him introduce himself, but we still have a number of solutions that we'd like to talk about before we completely switch over to his...
I wasn't switching to him. I was just introducing him.
All right, so let's have Mr. Carter, if you could just briefly introduce yourself, and then we're going to go back into the language topic for a little bit.
Yeah, yes, ma'am. I'm Christian Carter, of course, seventh-generation Washingtonian, fighting for the real residents of Washington, D.C., and I'm here to enjoy this group and hear what they have to say and connect with them, hear their issues, and push them forward. That's what I do. Thank you so much.
Okay, cool. And we were talking over the break about how we often talk about the problems. You know, we were hearing that there's a law, but it's not enforced. There's maybe not enough funding, not in general enough awareness. So this SMART program has, in fact, some solutions. And we'd like to start with Maria Alejandra telling us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so like we said before, SMART is the solution, right? We are the multilingual group of students who we are the voice of ELL students. We are the voice of DCPS. They are the ones bringing all these issues forwards. They are the students themselves going through all these issues that then are doing something about it. We're bringing this to the plate. We are bringing the solutions. We are bringing real work that is not being done. So I do want to say that SMART is a solution as well. Other things I do want to mention really quickly about, there's one thing that we didn't really talk about, which is the Uniform Per Student Funding Formula,
right,
which includes money for ELL students. This is given to principals in order for them to allocate resources for ELL families, which can be bilingual counselors hiring ESL teachers, offering translation and interpretation services, and also hiring translation aides. However, there hasn't been any transparency around this. We don't know what the budget looks like for all of this. We don't know what the final spending is. And also, at times, a bilingual teacher is used as an ESL teacher as well, even though they might not be trained for that.
Mm.
So that is something that I do want to bring up, because part of the problem and the solution is that we don't have enough ESL teachers. We don't have enough ESL counselors, bilingual counselors. And that is a solution that we want to see happen. Due to this Uniform Per Student Funding Formula, there is money out there to hire those teachers and to have that support for our ELL students. Another problem that we haven't really touched on, which is a big issue, is our graduation rates, which is what we're focusing on this year. And I would like for Frank to speak on it a little bit, since he is very well informed about it.
Focus this year is the graduation rate. We know that one half of ELL students are dropping out.
So why are they dropping out? We're doing a survey to find out what are they dropping out. And we found that some reason of why they're dropping out is because they don't have enough support at school, so mm-hmm. they feel like abandoned. And then, when I say support, I mean like they don't have enough attention by teacher. The connection is not really well between them and the parents. I mean, the school and the parents. So yeah.
Okay.
I want to go. Excuse me, Virginia.
Go ahead.
I want to go back since funding was brought up, and I'm glad it was. So I appreciate you bringing that up. You may be aware that there was an adequate study that was commissioned, and there were some preliminary recommendations that have already come out. But my question is, did that group charged with conducting that study, did they approach the ELL community or the bilingual community to ascertain if current needs or funding needs are sufficient?
I'm seeing some heads shaking here.
The ELL community was not part of those surveys, and most surveys that are done, ELL communities are not part of it. Also, I want to say that students, they are not part of all these surveys and all these, data that they're bringing up. The students are the ones that are going through this, and I think it's important to put them as part of the solution as well as talk about what the problem is.
I just want to say that I know that, you know, we might get, you know, pushback from DC Public Schools saying, well, we have it. We have it translated and we have our website translated and we have a training for teachers. But if all of that stuff is not getting to the right people, then again, it's just like having a law and not having it be enforced. It's of no use. And so, yes, those handbooks for parents exist in different languages. Yes, the website, if you really wanted to, you could find information. It's kind of difficult, but in different languages. How many of our families, we're talking mostly of low income, working class families, how many of them have constant internet access, right? Not many of them. So that's one problem. Teachers also themselves say that they really want to. The teachers are not the problem here. The teachers want to be able to speak to immigrant students and they want to be able to speak to the parents. However, they're not given the information about how to access the language line, what Frank was talking about earlier. They're not trained in doing that. It's not that hard to give all the teachers the access code that they can use to charge DC Public Schools every time they need to call for a translator over the phone. And so that's what they should be doing, and that support needs to be provided. So while it might exist in a theoretical way on the central office level in DC Public Schools, what we're not seeing is it translating down on the ground in the individual schools themselves. So just like what you mentioned yourself, these surveys, these things, they don't get then, you know, translated out, no pun intended, to our communities.
Okay. I want to open up a chance for Mr. Carter to comment on some of this and maybe tell us how you would envision opening a dialogue with students and with our immigrant communities. You know, you said you want to, you know, bring together the real Washingtonians. That includes a lot of different kinds of people. So, Mr. Carter.
Let me start by saying this. I'm from a community that's more diverse than any place in this world, which is called Adams Morgan. I grew up around Hispanics, Ethiopians, Israelis, Germans, Italians, and Trinidadians, mm-hmm. all on my block in my community. And let me say this, my Aunt Lillian Green, who helped start Adams Marie Reed Community Learning Center, which is the largest diversified school in Washington, D.C., let me say that I'm a sure advocate for diversifying our system. I've been saying, not just here, while this group is here, but I've been saying since I've been in this race that I want to diversify the school system. It's on all of my palm cards, my information. And what I mean by that is that the school system is 76% African American right now. And it's but the city is not 76% African American. We need to figure out how to diversify, bring people back into the school system, and also treat people correctly. What I'm proposing in my education plan is to put in place Montessori concepts, and one of those concepts is going to be foreign languages for even African American and white children that are in the school system, so that there we can break that cultural barrier. Because that's the problem. When you have a lot of the yellow students leaving out of school, dropping out, it's because they've been isolated. A lot of times they're being picked on by African Americans and white people because they're different and kids don't know better. But if we bring them in and give them the other people's cultures in the beginning, not just because we're America and you have to be American and act like us. No, we don't want to conform you. We want to embrace what you have.
Okay, Thomas, did you want to say something?
Yes. I want to ask a question of both Mr. Carter as well as the folks from Many Languages, One Voice. And I'll have Many Languages, One Voice respond first, and then Mr. Carter, you can chime in after. I've heard it said that the law as it was passed is not really being followed. And so I guess my question is, do you think there needs to be punitive measures put in place to ensure that the LEA, the local education agencies, particularly DCPS, and I don't know what's going on with the charter sector, but do you think there needs to be punitive measures in place to ensure that these folks adhere to the law?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. We can speak about federal legislation such as Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And so people can always bring a complaint and frankly, even a lawsuit under that, under the non-discrimination portion of the Civil Rights Act. It says that no agency, no institution that receives federal money, and that includes our schools, can discriminate on the basis of race, color, or national origin. And so we see that that is happening here. So there is already something in place. That the problem is having someone, actually file a complaint, go through that process, and actually sue, for example, The school system. That would be one way of doing it. But, you know, it's very difficult for a number of reasons, obviously, for immigrant families, for immigrants to feel like they can actually bring a case like that. And, of course, on the local level, the D.C. Language Access Act is enforced by the Office of Human Rights under D.C. government. The measure that we have there for enforcement is something called a language access complaint. And so, again, anyone can go in and file a complaint in person, on the phone, on the internet, if the law is not being followed. We've tried in the past. We had a student that was suspended for apparently changing her clothes in the bathroom or something. The principal told her she had to go home for 3 days, be suspended for this act. She didn't speak English, so she didn't understand herself exactly. She knew she had to go home, but she didn't know why. Mm. Her mother was not given a note that says that your child has been sent home. Her mother was not an English speaker. And so all of a sudden, the child is just at home without any explanation as to why and without any possibility for the mother or the child themselves to say, hey, this shouldn't be happening to me, right? Mm. So that is a clear violation. We filed a complaint with the Office of Human Rights, and the Office of Human Rights lost the complaint. So, you know, we have measures in place, again, like in theory, but then after filling out a 4-page form and submitting it with this office, they lose it, then they come back and say, file it again. That's a lot of burden to be putting on a resident to have to do, right? So we have those things. What we do propose legislatively, yes, is something like, you know, punitive measures. We see things like that in New York, again, proposed, but not necessarily again happening. Amendments to the law that allow for a private right of action or the ability to sue under the local law, or even just the right of an appeal. If Office of Human Rights says, actually, the law was followed, you guys are fine, the school is okay, it's in working order, then that's kind of it. There's no right to appeal right now. Mm. So we need to have the law change so that there is a right to appeal.
Okay, and Thomas had asked Mr. Carter to mm-hmm. respond.
Well, let me say this. I think that what we need in Washington, D.C. is we need to restructure, we need a shift in our moral compass when it comes to our neighboring nationalities. And what I mean by that is, and someone said it earlier on the earlier segment here, when we have, in some schools, even east of the river, we have foreigners that live, that go to school there, lots of them. And they have it the worst. They have it worse. It's worse for them than it is for students that go to Marie Reed Elementary School because they're at least together there. They're united there. Over here, we're not bringing the services across. What's happening is D.C. public school system is putting money in a budget when they're passing the budget in February to make everybody feel comfortable. But when the money actually gets utilized, how much of it is really getting utilized at the end of the year? They're restructuring those funds. Yes, sir.
Mr. Carter, I apologize for interrupting, but I want to get specific to this question. If you're running for mayor, if you are successful in that bid, what would you do to address the issue that was just raised about the law not being followed?
Well, the first thing that I do is I would bring in community organizers like this group that's here right now and have them sit on the board, sit on commissions and boards to help make sure that those areas that interest them the most were followed out and carried out. So they would have to, DCPS would have to pick them up as consultants and work with them in their specific areas, in their communities with certain schools to make sure that the dollars are getting used, that we have the bilingual counselors, and we need multicultural interpreters. They don't need to just be able to speak Spanish. They need to be able to speak French and other languages, as you said before. Absolutely. So I hope I answered your question, sir.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I want to make sure that we're able to wrap up our discussion of the language question. Clearly, we need way more than 45 minutes or 6 hours to discuss this, and then give Mr. Carter a chance to discuss some more general things about education. So we're about to go into our break, and when we come back, I think we will hear a little more from Mr. Carter and maybe some wrap-up comments from our visitors. Thomas?
All right, folks, you're listening to the Education Town Hall. We have in studio folks from Many Languages, One Voice, also mayoral candidate Christian Carter. And if you stay with us, I guarantee you, we will be right back.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM. WeActRadio.com.
My name is Nicole Lee, and I'm the president of Trans Africa, and Mandela still matters. Go to at Mandela Matters. We Act Radio. Do something.
Asherata. It's Asherata on the AM dial. Call me up and we'll talk for a while. If you want to keep it real and hear the tea, believe me, this is the place to be. Excuse you crazy for real. Excuse you, you crazy for real. Excuse you, you crazy for real. Look, chicka say word. Asherata.
This is Sherato on the Asherata Radio Show on We Act Radio 1480 AM and WeActRadio.com. Fierce, fearless, fabulous.
And this is Senora. Tune in every Thursday at 7 p.m. broadcasting live from historic Anacostia in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital.
Tune in every Thursday at 7 p.m. for the Asherato Show, giving great advice and dogmatic opinions on love, life, and leisure, guaranteeing the unfiltered, undeniable, and unadulterated truth.
We Act 1480 AM and WeActRadio.com, the city's only independent progressive radio station.
Rich, say word, Asherato.
Hi, I'm Patrick Ewing. I'm here giving something back to the community. I went to school here. I lived here in the community. You know, I have an office here on Minnesota Avenue. I always loved D.C., you know, just trying to give something back to the community of Ward 8 in this community or from around the country. We Act Radio. Do something.
Much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall. This is your host, Thomas Byrd, and it's indeed an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege to have in studio with us today many languages, many languages, one voice. We have a number of people, the executive director, the youth organizer, and a couple of students as well. And we're glad to have in studio with us Mr. Christian Carter, who's a mayoral candidate. And we were talking, we want to wrap up this conversation with Many Languages, One Voice. And so what I want to ask, going forward, what is it that you would like to see folks in the community, what can we here at the Education Town Hall do to assist your organization in conducting your mission?
Yes, thanks for asking that. It's actually, we don't get that a lot. So one of the big issues right now is that ELL students are not graduating on time. One out of two students aren't graduating. It's 50% of the ELL population are not graduating on time, which under DCPS is 4 years. Now, what are those reasons? And that is what we're working towards right now. What are the reasons that this is that students aren't graduating? And we found out through different research and actions that we've done, which one of them is our survey that we are conducting with other ELL students, is that they're being pushed out. They're aging out of the system. So for ELL students, which many teachers and people don't know, is that ELL students can register to a school up to the age of 21. So these are the issues that are happening, and we would like for when there are whoever the mayor will be to include the student voices in that. Include why do you feel not ready? Why are you being aged out? What are the other circumstances that are happening that you can't graduate in 4 years and be ready for higher education or the workforce? So I think that is something that's very important to us.
Okay. Well, obviously, we're going to have Many Languages, One Voice return to us and tell us about their survey and about the graduation rates. But we do want to hear more widely from Mr. Carter while he's with us. I believe that we had a student who was going to tell us her graduation story, but I'm afraid we're just going to have to,
let me tell you something, and this is why you should elect me mayor, and this is not a gimmick here. I'd rather hear from you than have you hear from me, because I'm going to be speaking at every debate. All my information is online. You know what, these people know what I'm about in Washington, D.C. I want to hear these kids, because it's really about them.
Okay, great. So Lydia, are you on the line with us?
Yes.
Can you tell us then, I believe you have a story to share about your graduation.
my graduation. Actually, when I was in school, it took me, I was supposed to graduate, like, in 2 years, because I transferred, like, some of my credits, but it took me about, like, 2 years, sorry. I was supposed to, like, graduate after transferring my credit, because I came as a senior. But it took me, like, 2 years to graduate.
Okay, can you tell us, I guess we should back up a little bit. Where did you come from?
All right. I came from Ethiopia.
And how old were you when you came here?
I was 16, about to go to, like, 17. Yeah.
So you were close to finishing high school, and it took you 3 years to get out. But you did manage to graduate?
Yes, I did manage to graduate, but it was... because of a lot of, like, efforts, that a lot of people were, like, helping me, and basically I can give the credit to, like, Money Language One Voice, because I didn't know that I have the right to demand, like, to go to summer school, but a lot of, like, going to, like, Money Language One Voice, I knew, like, they told me about my rights, that I can actually ask for those things, and it should be, like, for, like, every student. So I went back to talk to my principal, and again, I put, like, a lot of efforts to it, and finally they let me to take some classes during the summer, and actually they registered me as, like, ninth grade, and I was supposed to, like, stay for 4 years, but, like, I managed to finish it, like, in 2 years, because I took classes over the summer.
Okay, terrific.
What school did she attend?
What high school did you go to?
I went to Coolidge Senior High School.
Okay, also Coolidge. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Mr. Carter, this brings up a lot of issues about, you know, how we're going to honor the rights of all of our citizens and all kinds of questions. So I want to give you some time for our remaining few minutes to address anything that Lydia, our student, raised or that you've heard this morning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me start by just responding to this young lady that just came on. I believe that she's a prime example that shows Washington, D.C., some of the things that we need to do in the educational sector. For instance, there's so many children that come to America for the first time when they're 15 or 12. That's a cultural shock. We have to do things to be inviting to them. So we need to start comparing our curriculums to curriculums of other countries to see so that we can figure out how to allow their credits to transfer properly. Number one, the next thing we need to do is we need to make sure that our students are prepared for students from other cultures. Because if our students are not prepared that are from here for new cultures, then that means that our students are not going to be ready for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world, this new global economy, people are going in Washington, D.C. as an international city. It's not just national anymore. It's an international city. And with Washington, D.C. as an international city, we have to be in a place where we have almost a universal language. But to have that universal language, we have to appreciate and show other cultures.
Well, let me ask you, Mr. Carter, if you're successful in your bid for becoming mayor, obviously you're not going to be running the school system yourself. So I have to ask, what will be your criteria? What are you looking for in a leader for the school system? How would you go about selecting a chancellor or superintendent? I don't know which direction you're going, but please share that with us.
Well, if you leave it up to me as the winner, I don't want a chancellor. You know, we have this impact system right now. And what this system does is it evaluates teachers on a whim, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And their jobs are put at risk, which shouldn't be. Well, I believe that this chancellor that we have now needs to have an impact test done on her.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to figure out those things. And with sequestration coming this year, with the budgets for the educational sector being dropped from the federal government, being cut tremendously, what we have to do is we have to find ways to make money. And if we don't have a chancellor's office, I guarantee you we can put that money into the bilingual community. I guarantee you. So I hope that answers your question, sir.
So, yes. And so how would you, you mentioned this chancellor, so how would you grade the work that this administration has done in terms of education?
This administration has done terrible. See, because you can brag about certain statistics after you shift and change those statistics, but when you get down to it at the end of the day, when the people, when Maria, when we're all sitting in those communities, in those schools, and we're looking at the children losing hope. We're looking at their face. They don't have any guidance. We've taken out the structure in the educational system because we're teaching to test, but we're not teaching to the substance of what learning is. We're not teaching kids how to be leaders and creators of their new world. We're teaching them how to maintain a world that has failed us already.
Thomas, I wanted to just bring up some of the information that I had planned to use in my report and get a comment from Mr. Carter in particular about this. I don't know if you are aware, but yesterday the District of Columbia released new sets of school data, including attendance, discipline, turnover, and test results disaggregated by student groups. So we can now see, for example, how many students left a particular school and how many joined the student body throughout the year, as well as expulsions and suspensions. These reports are called equity reports, and they're funded in part by New Schools Venture Fund, which supports individual charter school operations and umbrella groups like FOCUS, Friends of Choice in Urban Schools. What interested me in this, and you can read more about it on our blog, educationtownhall.org, what interested me is that DC's acting superintendent of education said that this is a tool for school choice rather than, he said nothing about equity. Nobody who was quoted in the official announcement said anything about equity. They all talked about choice. He said, for example, it is vital that we equip our parents with a uniform set of metrics when searching for their children as they navigate the myriad public school options. And our chancellor of DC's traditional public schools also championed choice over equity, saying the new reports empower parents with accurate, reliable information to help them make the right choices for their students. And so I would just like to hear your response to this in general.
Okay, here's the thing. When you have to look at where they get their data, the data from, okay? It's skewed. It's not accurate, flat-out raw data. They're just giving the people the facts. It's only secluded to a certain population and a group and a certain grade level. They're taking these statistics,
right,
and they're giving
testing
them to you.
Right.
It's propaganda. Okay, that's my response to that.
Okay.
Let me ask you, Mr. Carter. There are many folks around town that have been clamoring for a moratorium on charter school, new charter schools opening up. Now, talk to us a little bit about just your thoughts around the relationship between DCPS and the charter sector. Has it been working well? Has it not been working well? Do you agree that there needs to be a moratorium? What are your thoughts around DCPS versus the charter sector?
Okay, here's what I feel about that. Now, people will tell you that the charter schools are a part of the traditional school system, a part of not the traditional, but a part of DCPS.
Public school system.
But that's kind of flawed that's a misstatement. Let me explain why. Because charter schools are public-private partnerships where government comes in and releases land and schools and different properties like they did up on Kansas Avenue on Ward 4 and took away the playground from the children, and now parents can't have their children go anywhere because one of the charter schools took the playground away. But let me say this. Charter schools do well. I'm not going to knock the charter schools, but what I am going to say, anytime that you deplete the resources from the public school traditional system, it is a problem. See, what we need to have is charter schools brag about a Montessori concept that they use a lot. We need to be able to brag about it as well as a traditional school. We need to have Montessori concept citywide. We also need vocational training. So what I believe is that let the charters do what they do. I'm not going to open up any more charter schools. And if anybody that doesn't want to vote for me because of that, go ahead, don't vote for me. I don't want your vote anyway. I want the votes of the people that want to do what's right. We need to keep our public school system in place. We need to put our investment back into that. Kaya Henderson cannot continue to sit here and create her entire legacy off of businesses that are running schools for profit.
You mentioned profit, so that you're talking about funding. So let me ask you, how would you, as mayor, allocate funding for DC public schools?
Well, I could go a lot of places with that question. Could you just be a little more specific?
I thought about it after that. I need to be a little more specific. Okay, right now, high schools, for instance, are saying that they don't receive adequate funding to support the mission that they've been charged with. You got a lot of folks that say we don't have adequate middle schools in the right. You don't have quality middle schools.
Can I say something to you? I just want to stop you right there, because you're not going to get adequate funding in these schools because the heads do not want to push your agenda, our agenda in these communities. The agenda that they are pushing is this choice agenda, and that agenda is focused on something completely different that came out of Yale and Harvard, a study that put together, we're going to change the educational system. But there's many flaws about that. We have 1,000 teachers that have been fired over the last four, going on 5 years in Washington, D.C., because of these different types of systems. And what we need to do is we need to reassess our values. If when I become mayor of Washington, D.C., and I say win, because I'm going to fight and work with the people of Washington, D.C., and they're not going to let me down because I'm not going to let them down. So when I win this race, the first thing that I'm going to do is focus on bringing together the communities. Because if the people in the communities are not leading this process, but we're importing people from places that are not in touch with our communities, then we're going to have a problem every time. They're never going to hear us. I need somebody that's going to hear. I want Maria sitting up there in that place because she's going to be able to hear what her community is talking about. My job is to empower those who are already empowered and to put them in a position where they can carry out what their constituents want from them.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to just mention one other item that unfortunately got short shrift last week, and I'm going to have to ask everyone to just go ahead and read educationtownhall.org. But one of the things that occurs to me is that last week we were talking about a study about English language learners in the very early years. We've been talking a lot about high school and about the needs of older students and adults. But this study showed that English language learners, especially lower income English language learners, are really helped by early engagement of the parents and of the children. And at the same time that this study is coming out, we're cutting funds for early childhood, and 57,000 kids who used to be in Head Start no longer are because of the sequestration, which Mr. Carter mentioned. And so I just want to make sure that we cycle back to some of the different age groups, don't just always think about high school, and also cycle back to the fact that we can't put money in our schools and leave children starving, for example. Did you want to say something, Maria?
Yeah, of course. So to that, I want to respond with, there was the Nation's Report Card that came out not that long ago, where D.C. bragged about the increase of math and reading scores. Now, D.C. is still at the bottom of D.C. Education in the nation. And also, not just that, not only are mainstream students suffering, their reading and math scores are low, the ELL population is lower than that. There's no support. There's no the report said that, you know, we are gaining numbers, math and in reading, for fourth and eighth grade. This is also younger ELL students. But then there's a huge disparity between the mainstream students and then the ELL students.
Okay.
There's huge disparities among white students and then students of color.
Okay. So I'm afraid we're going to have to, again, that's going to have to be a topic for another day. Thomas, did you want to ask any last thing before we close out here?
I want to go back to Mr. Carter and ask him about his view on federal control of the public education.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I would not keep that control. That's too much control for one man. I believe that if we're going to keep, because by me being mayor, I'm not here to be the mayor for life. You know, I want to come in as a regular person, do my job, fix this system, and let it move on with people that are going to be progressive. I'm not going to clog this system up. What I believe is that as part of doing that, I have to have the vision ahead of time to know which things I need to relinquish back over to the people. And that's one of the things, the school system is one thing that I would, one of the first things, and you can hold me to this, that I'm going to release and let go. Because
so are you saying that you would advocate for restoration of the school board?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to give the school board back their power. They have power. I don't want to insult them because there's some very good people. A lot of those guys are wonderful. They have power. They have things that they can get done. They have things that they can do. But they need ultimate power. and for them to have that ultimate power, because that is giving the power back to the people. See, the reason that we don't have that, it's been set up in a way, the reason we don't have it working like that is because we were tricked through the Williams and the Fenty and the Gray administration. It was pulled away from us.
We're in our last 60 seconds. Thomas, did you want to take us out?
I'm done. I just want to say that I want to thank Mr. Carter for coming on and ask, would you come back another time before this election for the primary?
I would love to be here. Okay. I'm not a candidate that's going to change my colors. Okay. Anytime you call me, I'm here.
Okay, and I want to thank the folks from Many Languages One Voice for coming on today. I want to invite them back in a future date as well. Would you agree to come back?
Yep, we'd love to be there, and we'd love to be here when we have our campaign demand ready to announce to all of you as well.
Okay. You have friends at the Education Town Hall. This is your platform. This is your venue. You are welcome to come back. The show is established for your organization and others like yours. And so, folks, we're going to have to end it right there. We're glad that you all joined us in studio today. And, folks, we're glad that you chose to tune in and check out the show today. Until next Thursday at 11 a.m. on the Education Town Hall, this is your host, Thomas Byrd, for Virginia's Facts. Peace.
I'm Tali, Public Outreach Director at TransAfrica, and I just want to talk about the importance of what Mandela means to me and many others. I think the biggest quality is integrity, having integrity to do the people's work, to be the people's servant, and also making sure that you're steadfast in commitment to make positive change, speaking truth to power. Because oftentimes when we talk about Mandela, we don't want it at